You are listening to Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoph. This is edition 206. Today, I am going to be featuring a conversation with Salim Valley. Salim is a longtime activist and labor organizer, student activist, and also has worked in the academic sphere for many years, who's based in South Africa. I spoke with Salim about the long-term solidarity work with Palestine that he has been working on in the South African context. Clearly today, as the Israeli state continues its genocidal military campaign against the Palestinian people of Gaza, this solidarity movement in South Africa is critically important, and it has played a huge role in bringing and mobilizing people globally to stand with Palestine. I thought it would be important to hear a South African perspective on the current case at the International Criminal Court. So here's my conversation with Salim.
Thanks, Stefan. I mean, we've known each other for a long time. So I'm a professor at the University of Johannesburg. I have been academia for about 20 years. Prior to that, I was in the trade union movement at a very important time when trade unions were legalized shortly after that. And because of the importance of workers' struggle in our country, you know, South Africa is industrialized and we had a very strong workers' movement. And that's because of the way capitalism developed here, largely in the mining sector and then manufacturing, agriculture. And the workers' movement played, I would argue, the most important role in bringing about change in South Africa. Not fundamental change, because we still have a neoliberal government, but very importantly, a move away from apartheid to democracy, in a sense. So that's my story, really. I'm chair, it's a National Research Foundation chair on workers, adult, and community education. But I'm also involved in a number of community organizations as well as the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, and I'm on the coordinating committee of the South African Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Campaign.
Thank you for that introduction and the context to your work. There's many, many layers to a movement against colonization, against systemic racism and the incredible violence that happens as a result of that on a daily basis, but also the systemic violence. So you talked about what's happened in South Africa and sort of it being an ongoing process, there being some structural changes around the destruction of the apartheid racist system, but not full economic liberation, as it were. And I'm wondering if you could sort of talk about why it's important to think in this moment about all the layers that are involved in struggles for change, and also how it happens over time, because I think that also relates to Palestine. Right now, the world's mobilizing for Palestine, and that is so important. But that mobilization process will continue and will have many parts. So I think learning from that sort of process and thinking around social movements as related to the experience in South Africa is important.
Sure. So, you know, formally, I'm involved in the education sector. And in South Africa, as in all other countries, we can't separate education from the context, the socio-economic context, the socio-psychological context. And whatever you do in schools, in universities, you know, if people live in conditions of protracted poverty, if a child comes to school hungry, regardless of the curriculum and the motivation of the teacher, it's limited what you can do. If there are issues of child abuse, if there are issues of overcrowding, lack of resources, if parents are unemployed or if they are super exploited, it matters. So all of these issues do matter. I mean, you know, we'll go back and forth between South Africa and Palestine, but in South Africa too, in the struggle against apartheid, you know, apartheid was a system which divided people, which allocated resources according to the skin color of people. In Palestine, what we have is a scholasticide. All the universities in Gaza have been bombed. You know, almost over 100 professors have been killed. Thousands of students have been killed. This is in Gaza. You know, conditions in the West Bank are also really problematic. Schools are closed, teachers are arrested, students are arrested. Bir Zeit University, they arrested the entire student leadership. They're still in prison. So these things do matter. Context matters. So, you know, you started off talking about people correctly and understandably are outraged at the massacres and the atrocities which happen on a daily basis, whether it's hospitals being bombed, children, you know, 1,000 children have had their limbs amputated without anesthetics. The question that over 1 million people are homeless, their homes destroyed, over 50% are living under acute hunger. This is the context, and as educators, one needs to talk about it. I think, what is the purpose of education? You know, people talk about human rights, but if we ignore this reality, we're talking about Palestine now, the same can be said about other struggles. Of course, Palestine is very critical in today's world for reasons we can go into later on. And as our mutual friend Adam Hania mentioned in one of his writings, it's not the depth of suffering which is extreme, it's not the length of suffering which is, you know, from 1948, actually I want to argue even before that, when the British colonized Palestine. It's the role Israel plays around the world. You know, Israel supported the apartheid system at the time when most of apartheid South Africa's relations with countries were dissolving. Israel remained loyal to their friend. They helped South Africa develop 6 nuclear bombs, etc. So for us as educators, we need to speak to the context, we need to speak to the importance of Palestine, we need to show that education is not just about skills, it's also, and knowledge, those are very important, but it's also fighting injustice, it's fighting inequality, it's fighting wherever it occurs around the world. So for me, there is no separation between my work as an educator and my involved in social justice, social movements, and very importantly, global solidarity, because as a South African, I mentioned the workers' role in our freedom, in inverted commas. Many people feel we are still not economically free, politically free, yes, as you mentioned. But international solidarity played a big role in that, together with the workers' movement, together with other aspects of our struggle, whether it was sanctions against apartheid South Africa or the armed struggle as well. And as you know, when I was studying, I spent some time in Canada when I had to leave the country because I was involved in the student movement here. And I ended up in York University in Toronto. And in fact, I didn't tell you, I don't think, Stefan, once during my break, I hiked to... hitchhiked to Quebec City in Montreal when I was about 20 years old. I wouldn't recommend that now, but anyway. But the point is, I was at York University and we had a college, Norman Bethune College, and I spent a lot of my time there and I was really intrigued with Norman Bethune. He was this Canadian who understood the meaning of solidarity, and we have people like that throughout the world. So, you know, it's not where you are born and what your citizenship is, but it's to be part of humanity, whether it's fighting for the rights of migrant workers wherever we are, against xenophobia, fighting for people who are struggling for their freedom, like Palestinians, fighting against climate catastrophes, and it's really big business and governments and the military that are making the world uninhabitable for human beings, particularly the more vulnerable people, whether they're indigenous people, people living precarious lives in small island states. So what I'm trying to tell you is that while I'm involved in education, all these struggles are linked. You can't separate them. Some of them come to the fore, require us to galvanize our efforts, like the genocide now, but they are all integrated. They are all important. But for us to be effective, in the same way progressive people, people with conscience, came together during the Spanish Civil War, during the Vietnamese struggle, or people of Indochina against American imperialism, or when people came together to offer support for people in this part of the world, the Southern Africa, you know. Again, I'm more familiar with Toronto, but we had similar movements in Montreal when I was there. You know, we had this very vibrant group, and I remember John Saul, a great Canadian who died recently, who was instrumental in forming the Toronto Committee for the Liberation of Southern Africa, and it had its counterpart in Montreal. So, different periods of history require us to come together as human beings to offer solidarity, which is not a form of charity, but it's, allies in different terrains, trying to support each other for similar objectives. And these are the words of Samora Machel, who we believe was assassinated from Mozambique.
In the context of everything you just described and these interlinkages that you generously shared, maybe it would be meaningful for people to hear from you how it's been in South Africa in the last months. Can you talk about the protests? Just describe them. How have they been? How have things been going there? You know, what do they look like? How do they sound?
No, absolutely. I mean, firstly, the context. I think that's important. You know, there for many years, for us in South Africa, the solidarity movement only took on a visible space after 1994. Prior to that, any expression of support for Palestinians was shut down very rapidly. You would end up in prison. I remember, for example, 1982, when I just came back at the time of the Sabra Shatila massacre, there were protests at a number of universities, but it was violently smashed by the apartheid regime. So after 1994, we formed the Palestine Solidarity Campaign. It was hard work because of the propaganda of the apartheid regime, you know, against the Palestinians and Palestinian resistance. These were terrorists, etc. Israel is our friend. They're fighting against the savages in the same way the apartheid regime was fighting against the terrorists of the liberation movements. Mandela was called a terrorist, of course. The liberation movements were called terrorist organizations. So we had to go on a widespread, wide-scale education program. We linked up with the trade union movement, with social movements, including progressive people in faith-based groups and student organizations. And we had many, many campaigns. It was very difficult in the beginning. But then we had the 2001 Durban Conference Against Racism. And people made common cause around the world with South Africans fighting against racism, against xenophobia, etc. And, you know, it was Dalits from and Adivasis from India, indigenous people from South America, marginalized people around the world, African Americans, people from the Caribbean wanting reparations for slavery, and Palestinians, but also anti-Zionist Jewish people who were in the forefront of the struggle, and in fact, Palestinians from refugee camps in the diaspora, as well as in the West Bank and Gaza. So it was an incredible event, and our organizations and the solidarity movement came. You know, we had this second, we formed the second anti-apartheid movement, symbolically. We had a march of 10,000 people in Durban at the close of the Conference Against Racism, led by our veterans, struggle veterans and social movements, with Palestinians, anti-Zionist Jews in the fore, and we had a huge banner, Zionism is racism. Of course, the US forced other countries to pull out. They claimed this was an anti-Semitic hate fest. It was nothing like that. And it was an excuse for them not to address issues like reparations. They tried their best to cause conflict between groups. They didn't succeed. Unfortunately for us, the horrible bombings happened in New York, the Twin Towers, a few weeks after the conference. So we didn't have the opportunity to mobilize around the conference and to challenge the kind of disinformation about the conference. But shortly after that, you know, 4 years later in 2005, the Palestinians put together the BDS campaign, which we supported, of course. It's been a lot of work for a long time. We've been pressurizing our government, which always rhetorically supported the Palestinian struggle. But, you know, business lucre quite often trumps solidarity. And because the government had this notion, this neoliberal notion of economic growth, and then money will trickle down, and we need investments. So it was the whole idea of not scaring people. So trade with Israel continued, etc. But it was through dint of hard work of thousands of people around the country, trade unions and others, that slowly we started making dents in government. We got them to question things. And of course, you know, Stefan, what helped greatly was Mandela's principled nature. You know, his famous views that our freedom will be incomplete without the freedom of Palestinians. He had very strong feelings about Palestine. And people like Archbishop Desmond Tutu, you know, who despite tremendous pressure from around the world and from within the church hierarchy, he stood firm in supporting Palestinians. It helped that he went there. And his famous words were, like many South Africans, hey, you know, this is even worse than what we experienced. This is the truth. So I think that for all those reasons, and, you know, the laws we had here, segregating people, controlling people, the matrix of security laws, all of that we see in Palestine. It's not the same, but it's similar. And it's worse. Any scholar will tell you how much worse it is. There are important differences. The apartheid regime in South Africa relied on black labor. It wasn't, while they formed the Bantustans, they needed black labor. In Palestine, occupied Palestine, their aim is to get rid of Palestinians. So that is a crucial difference, and import migrant labor. So it's a kind of genocide we've seen in Turtle Island, in the US, in Australia, and even in South Africa with the Khoisan people, with the Dutch colonialists and the British colonialists. So that is the difference. When it's been steady work and sometimes very depressing work, and, you know, you're familiar with this, Stefan, you work and work, you don't see any gains. There are very low points. You call up meetings, 10 people come if you're lucky. You post, you do graffiti, you do what you can as creatively as you can. And that's what we did here as well for a long, long time. Finally, things started coming together because of some individuals in government, but linked to social movements, to progressive organizations, to progressive academics, the likes of Archbishop Desmond Tutu, the South African Council of Churches. But it's never an easy struggle. You know, the Christian Zionists today around the world, including South Africa, who are very well resourced, And who, by the way, are anti-Semitic, but for short-term gain, support the Zionists in Israel. And they have a hold in South Africa, as they do in Brazil and elsewhere. So they are a big stumbling block. But because of all this work, and I don't think social movements, etc., should only take credit. There are principal people still in government, particularly in our Department of International Relations and Cooperation. And once the killing started, it was just unconscionable for them not to do anything. They had an uphill battle as well. They had a demarche on the Israeli ambassador. They withdrew our diplomats from Israel for consultation. That wasn't sufficient. We had many, many rallies and protests. And finally, after a lot of discussion, helped with legal people, not just from South Africa, from around the world, the government first decided to approach the ICC on war crimes and on apartheid, which is a crime against humanity, and use the UN, etc. But we know it's very difficult because of the Security Council and America's vetoes. But they nonetheless use that as a forum. And because the ICC, the prosecuting arm, is headed by people who would readily get Putin to be sanctioned for war crimes, in this particular instance, for taking children from Ukraine to Russia. But Netanyahu kills children, every 10 minutes, bombs, and in the most horrific way, but nothing happens. So the prosecuting arm of the ICC, the Global South, are very suspicious of it. Tony Blair, George Bush, etc., none of them were taken to task, whereas African dictators and Putin, etc., are. So there are these questions. But we then decided, and legal people and our government, and with the support of people around the world who were encouraging them, who studied the Genocide Convention, and we decided to go the ICJ route.
That was a conversation with Salim Valley, South African activist, academic, and author. Thank you so much to Salim for joining the program today from South Africa. This has been another edition of Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoph. We air weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal at 11 a.m. on Wednesdays, on CGLO 1690 a.m. also in Montreal, Geogeage on Wednesdays at 8:30 a.m., on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg at 10:30 p.m. on Tuesdays, on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario at 11:30 a.m. on Wednesdays, on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria, BC on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. and Saturdays at 7 a.m., on Met Radio 1280 a.m. in Toronto at 5:30 a.m. on Fridays, and on CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Our program is archived at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. Thanks so much for tuning in. We are also a podcast. Look us up on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and please tell a friend. Thanks so much for joining us, and I will speak to you next week.
Files.
Radio.
Exploring feminism and technology through space and time.
Okay, super. How are you today?
I'm very well.
Excellent.
My name is Julia Eckert. I'm German and I live in Brussels. I'm a viola player and also a programmer at Kyoto Workspace, also here in Brussels. At the workspace, I'm making, together with my colleagues Carolina and Henry, I'm making the program. We receive the residents, we listen to the residents, and we make research projects from what we hear. As a viola player, I have been classical training. I have done some improvisation also, and since some years now, I am mostly working with composer Elian Radige.